Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. We're coming to you from the Power Talk Live studios. As always, we're looking to apply the wisdom, knowledge, and understanding of King Solomon to the confused culture we live in today. And I really think that, I can't forget, this week is the real anniversary of our show, 2 years. As Fred said last week, happy birthday music there, maybe, Mike. As he said last week, it's actually this week. So this has been 2 years. Hopefully you guys have been getting some level of the power to think for yourself out of the show, the ability to think a little more logically and maybe even to think with a more truthful basis for what you're going forward with. As always, you can find us here every Saturday from 11 to 12, powertalklive.com, and our prior shows always available on our website, solomononblast.com, where you can download the MP3, listen on your own time, and whenever you want to pull us up and get a quick input from Solomon himself. The power to think for yourself, that's really what we've been trying to provide for the past 2 years and continue to do so going forward. But like I said, that thinking for yourself has to be based on truth, not what the confused culture that we live in claims is truth, which is a lot of times more based on emotion and not logic. And Solomon's wisdom in Proverbs and in Ecclesiastes is really an education system for the ages. The very beginning of Proverbs, Solomon says it's for gaining wisdom and instruction, for understanding words of insight, for receiving instruction in prudent behavior, doing what is right and just and fair, for giving prudence to those who are simple, knowledge and discretion to the young. And he says, let the wise listen and add to their learning, and let the discerning get guidance. And with it being at the end of the school year, summer's coming along, I thought it would be worthwhile to ask the question, what does Solomon's wisdom say about educating our children? What advice does he give his son? What are his thoughts in Ecclesiastes when maybe he's a little more cynical? Well, actually, I think both of those books are really a complete education system. And like I said before, they're an education system, probably one of the oldest recorded. But in our culture today, the wisdom of the ages is ignored in favor of an education system that wants to tell you whether or not you can use a public bathroom, depending on your sex. Common core, public education. I think the real question is, and that's kind of what we're going to discuss today, is there any education left in our public education system today in our country? I mean, if you look at the news, look at the system, that's a big question. Is there any education in public education today? But we'll discuss that more after we come back from these breaks. We'll let Alice Cooper give us his thoughts.
Yeah.
with more Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. So the question is school out not only for summer, but as Alice Cooper says, is school out forever? And that's kind of the question I have is there really any education left in the public education system anymore? The question, you know, one of the things that always comes out of Proverbs and Solomon is instruction, education. He says in Proverbs 9, give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man and he will increase in learning. But my question is there any education left in public education with the current state of education? Now, Arizona, just this past week, has passed the Proposition 123 that was on the ballot just by a very, very thin margin that puts $3.5 billion into education, kind of in response to some of the lawsuits that were in place that was supposed to provide this money in the past. A lot of that money is coming from state trust fund money, and it's going into education. $3.5 billion, but the question is, will it make any difference? Has any of the money that we've put into the public education system really, as Solomon says, has it taught a just man and have our kids increased in learning from the system? The other thing that's been in the news and pretty prevalent is this whole aspect of the Obama administration telling the public schools that you've got to make way for the transgender in the bathrooms in the school. Now, this alone would ask you, why in the world would you want to send your kids to public schools? And if that's what their focus is on, I would have to say, Fred, that they are not educating in the public education system with that being their direction.
More and more, the public school has become an outlet for government policy. And, you know, back in the day, the public schools were basically accountable to their districts, and districts suggested that the public school system was organized on a local level. And the parent-teachers organizations and even the district supervisors that were elected in various parts of the country, whatever they called them, all of those people brought a local voice, and they had influence and impact over what that school district taught, down to the textbooks that they used, and the principals and the authorities and administration authorities within the school district were accountable to the local people. So all of that seems to have been transferring on a regular, basis to the federal level. And I think when you look at the public schools today, you have to ask yourself, is this still representative of what we think here locally? Or is this basically the government public service announcement, a 12-year public service announcement that's coming down constantly from Washington?
Yeah, and I think Solomon would say it best where he says the borrower will be slave to the lender. And I think that's what we've become in the public education system is, as long as the federal government is providing funds for these schools to be able to do the things that they want to do, they become the slave to what the government says they have to do rather than, like you say, at a local level, being able to make the decisions for what is best for your particular environment.
Yeah, now I don't know what the school system has to do to fix itself. I mean, you look at some of these numbers, and you have an article here by Walter Williams that is just downright depressing when he especially talks about that school in Baltimore that put out some serious players like Thurgood Marshall and some others. Mm-hmm. And where it is today, it's just an astonishing, dichotomy. But when you think about the government's influence over the school system, You know, I guess it goes back to basic conservative theory that the more the government's involved, the less quality you're going to find. And, right. You know, there's only a status quo, a certain level of just getting by. It's like a government building. Anybody in America knows the difference between a government building and a building built by, let's say, Donald Trump, right?
Or private industry. Yeah.
Private industry.
Right.
You go into a building built by private industry, they have to compete. So they're going to have a little bit of extra flair, the quality, the style. Everything's going to be completely upgraded compared to a government building, which you're going to see exposed, 8x8x8 blocks, you know, and you're going to, and you understand this is a government building. I can live with it. You know, you get that.
But
it's not as good.
Yeah.
Right.
But in some cases you see the government buildings with a lot of opulence that says, where did that money come out of? Whose pockets did it come out of? And people like to have nice, big, shiny buildings for their state capitals and their county courthouses and that kind of thing. So the people in some respects
don't mind a government building that's kind of staid looking because we understand where the money comes from.
Yeah, it comes out of my pocket. Or at least we used to be able to understand that. But I'm thinking the education system has warped people's view of that, let's build. It doesn't matter because the government's going to pay for it anyways, right? And that's kind of the approach. Yeah, these numbers from this article from Walter Williams, he says, when it comes to reading and math skills, just 34% and 33%, not much difference there, of eighth grade students tested proficient or above their grade level. So only a third of the kids are at the eighth grade level for reading and math skills. And he said recent test scores show poor achievement levels in other academic areas. Only 18% of eighth graders are proficient in U.S. history, 27% in geography, and 23% in civics. So 3/4 of the people out there have no idea what U.S. history really is, geography, or civics. And you can see that. Just there's all these different shows out there. There's one from Fox News. I don't know if you've ever seen it, Waters World, where he goes out and he interviews people in the public. And it's pretty obvious. People are clueless.
And he asks them, like, the most basic questions about government or government. Yeah.
Who's the president?
Positions and whatnot.
So,
again, when the government's agenda, which is always going to be political because these are political officials, they're elected. And when they're elected officials, their minds are always on re-election or at least promoting the party agenda that put them there. So this is why you need the local authorities to counterweight, you know, this kind of thinking. Otherwise, it's going to be hyper-political. Everything coming down the pike is going to be, it's going to express to some degree the politics of those that are in charge. And that's not what you really want your kids going to school for, I don't think.
Absolutely not. And it goes from the center point of middle school, high school, elementary, and it's going both directions, though. That's the problem, is now they're talking about preschool, right? Government-funded preschool. Why? Because why should somebody have to pay for preschool that can't afford it? So let's
I mean, they've had Head Start in those kinds
of
programs.
And those are no better in a lot of cases with regards to the quality of what comes happens. But it's even more so now. I've seen in articles that they're looking at, let's fund preschool for these kids that don't have enough money to, you know.
Now let's talk about the transgender bathroom issue where Obama has really dictated, which is completely illegal. He doesn't even have the power to do this. The only question is how the Republican Congress, the mostly Republican Congress, is going to challenge him, which he's pretty used to them not challenging him.
Right.
And so that's why he does what he does. But the idea that the government, let's hit the spokesperson for the government, can dictate to people on a local level all the way down to a little school in Vail, Arizona, for example, and tell these people that you have to, in order to get federal money, let children basically choose their own sexual identity when it comes to going to the bathroom is, I mean, we're talking about an issue that is far from being solved scientifically. You know, asking a young child to just come up on a, you know, on a, again, I mentioned last week, I think this is a form of child abuse, because if anything, as a child, you want to give these kids as much security and stability as possible, and later in life, they'll figure out a few things for themselves. But to open up one of the most basic expressions of your humanity
absolutely,
for a question at such a young age, I think is abusive.
Yeah.
I think this political agenda is downright abusive
and
hurtful and damaging, and they're asking these little children to think about things they should not have to think about, and any little child would rather be told, this is how you're supposed to do it, and they'll figure it out later if they need to, you know.
Right.
But
now,
and to say that you have to do this based on this thing that's not even any near doesn't have any scientific or psychological.
There's no truth to it.
Truth to it, and basically make a dictate out of it.
Right.
Is again, I think it's. I think he should be impeached for it personally.
And actually, there the, I think it's the Oklahoma. I think the state politicians in Oklahoma are getting together to try and put together articles of impeachment against Obama and the Department of Education and everything because of this. Now, the article I saw said that it was just a letter, a policy letter, I guess, that was going out from the Department of Education and the Department of Justice, and it was based on discrimination is how they were approaching it. Now, the interesting thing was last week when this came out, a gentleman by the name of General Jerry Boykin, and if you're anywhat of a military historian, he's the man that started Delta Force. So pretty significant set of credentials there. He actually is still teaching at Hampden-Sydney College, and that particular college is one of the few all-male schools still in the country. It's in Virginia. And he was talking at that school. He had a speech to conservatives, and he was talking about this whole transgender people using the ladies' room, and he cracked a joke in his speech. The comment he made was, "The first man who goes into the restroom with my daughter will not have to worry about surgery." So guess what happened? Well, the LGBT groups, a group of them got together and started boycotting them and, you know, made a big ruckus about it. So the college said that they weren't renewing him for next year's education or bringing him back as a adjunct professor at this college. And that created a lot of uproar. Well, fortunately, there are enough, I guess there were still enough smart people in that college that they actually reversed the decision just yesterday and came out on the news today that they have decided not to fire him, and so they're bringing him back as a visiting professor. But it's that kind of thing that you see when you speak out against, and he didn't, if you reread his comments, he didn't say anything. He just generically said, the first man that goes into the bathroom with my daughter isn't going to have to worry about surgery. It's pretty generic, but he got a lot of flack for it, and to the point where they fired him, and then when they got the flack back at them, they realized, well, maybe they'd made a mistake. But it just shows you what level of control the federal government has, even in these areas.
And it shows you where it's all going. And
right. So the question is, why would you want to put your
now,
kid
you know,
into
getting
public
to
education?
The discussion, you mentioned Oklahoma. You have to kind of spill constitution-wise into the discussion of states' rights. And I think that states' rights argument has been abused, especially when it comes to discussing slavery. However, it does say, you know, in the Constitution, for anybody that's read it, you know, it's really not that long. You get the idea that it would be like the tax code and all of these clauses and everything that are hard to understand.
Right.
It's really not that impossible to understand.
Most normal government documents, right, is what you would think.
This is unlike that. And it says anything in the Constitution that's not specifically delineated in the Constitution is pushed out to the states. I mean, it says that very clearly.
Right.
And so I think what's really going to have to happen here, like in Oklahoma, is that the state legislatures are going to have to start stepping up too. And they're going to have to start demanding that the federal government back off it. The way this whole thing works, and I'm no expert, I've taken a class recently, is that they expect each agency, especially on the federal level, they expect each agency to act vigorously on its own behalf. In other words, they expect the way it works. It's really nothing wrong with having a strong and energetic executive as long as the legislative branch pushes back.
And says it's outside of the scope.
Yeah, exactly. And defends their their portion of the Constitution. And what's happening now on the federal level is for all these political reasons and all this expedient and reelection, we don't want to look bad and we don't want our name to look like this. They're not doing their job. And that is why the American people are so angry. This is why Trump and Bernie are still such factors today. I don't know. We'll see what happens with Bernie. But, you know, it's all based on the fact that we know that the Congress is completely overly politicized. People care more about their careers than challenging this man stepping out of his boundaries.
And that's the way with any of this.
Speaking of the president.
Any bureaucracy, though. I mean, that's the whole problem with the education system. Even at the local levels, I mean, you have to admit that TUSD, I'll admit it publicly, we're in Tucson, TUSD, Tucson Public School Systems, is one of the worst ones, maybe. I don't know, maybe it's the worst or one of the worst, but it's a significantly bad school system. Now, open and honest, I graduated from it, but that was a long time ago, and I think there's a much, much different environment nowadays than there was back then. So the question is, you know, is continuing education through public education the right approach? I don't know. We'll come back and continue to discuss this right here on Solomon on Blast. We're back with more of Solomon on Blast, talking about whether school's out and whether public education has any education in it versus the true educational system, which is the wisdom of Solomon over the ages, provides a lot better system. I think if you look through all of the text of Proverbs, it really is a full-range education system, both for the parents and for the children. And when Solomon says, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's older, he will not depart from it, I think it's definitely a direction to parents that we, as parents, probably have the best view of what gifts and skills our children have, and we should be the one that are training them because we understand their gifts and skills better than that school teacher that hasn't seen them in the first 5 years of their life. And yet we hand that over to the public school systems expecting them to figure it out and come up with what they're going to do for the rest of their life. And what we're seeing is an education system that doesn't involve education, but in reality, indoctrination.
Yeah, indoctrination and child care. I mean, that's a lot of what the school system is about. You know, the workforce has changed dramatically, you know, in the last 40, 50 years. Yep. So when both parents are working full time, it's different. For example, kindergartners used to go to school, remember, half yep. day. And yep. that's really all you needed. But today, you know, they're there an extra 2 hours, I think, then they would have.
Then they put them into the daycare system.
Then they go into the daycare system because all of these are stopgap measures, not just about education, but they're trying to watch the children as well, holding onto them a little bit longer, keeping them, you know, so the daycare doesn't have to carry them as long right. until the mom or dad gets off of work. And can, so there's a whole lot of different other issues besides the quality of education that, you know, the three R's that, right. that they used to be worried about.
And that really was the basis for it was reading, writing, even if you don't spell it correctly, and arithmetic. Again, you don't spell it correctly, but at least you got the concept there. And I think that that's not in our education system. So if you see what Solomon says, he says, "Surely I am more stupid than any man and do not have the understanding of man. I neither learned wisdom nor have knowledge of the Holy One." When you don't have that, the wisdom, you don't have the knowledge, you end up stupid, according to Solomon. So the question is, why, and especially maybe for Christians, why do we continue to send our children into the public schools if they're not going to get educated but indoctrinated?
Well, again, you know, I'm a little bit leery of the Christian secular worldview. You know,
well,
I think we all live in the same world.
I say anybody, especially Christians.
But having said that, I still think if you can turn the tide and put education back in the hands of
local people,
local school districts, giving them more of a voice in determining how they're going to educate their kids, that at least the school districts, the public school system can be saved in pockets.
Okay, so
there's still pockets now where
it can be decent. I'm not saying everything's horrible. Obviously, there's some very good performing schools, and
right.
but in most cases, they're not in the poorer sections of the country. They're not in the inner cities, obviously.
Well, the inner cities and the urban centers are the guinea pigs of federal education.
Right. It shows you what you get when you
Absolutely.
Put the federal government into the
Because
control.
There's very few, quite frankly, because there's very few voices coming from the parents that are challenging these people.
Exactly.
So they have a free rein to do whatever they want. And so whatever initiative comes down from Washington, D.C., it's going to go straight into that school district in the inner city. And they have very little, there's no pushback. And so...
But I think in
the suburbs, there is pushback.
Yeah.
There are people who care. There are families that are involved.
But in a lot of cases, they're nowhere near as involved because, like you said, both parents are working. And I think until you can break the federal hold on the income tax system and get back more control there, then I think you still have that... They're in bondage to having to work because they don't have enough money to live, in theory, on one income. Now, a lot of cases, most people spend way above their means. So the problem really isn't their income. The problem is what they're putting out, taking out of their pocket and spending on. But when the federal government's coming in and taxing people to death, it's much, much harder to live off of one income, right?
Right, right.
So the burden that the federal government has put on families and individuals from a income tax system has driven it to the point where now, in theory, both people have to go out to work to support and raise a family. So even if you fix it by getting the federal government out of the education system, you've still got the problem
right.
that how do you ensure that the parents are available to watch over that local system if they're both working all the time. And I think that was really the problem.
Yeah, you still have all the same social challenges,
right.
whether the federal government is dictating or not.
Because we do have homeschooling, right?
A lot
of states have that as an option.
And remember the voucher question that was really popular 15 years ago or so, and it was mm-hmm. all the politicians were talking about it. And I think one of the great ironies there is that the Democrats who opposed it on every level, were put in a very awkward position after, especially after all the rhetoric about their love for the inner city and trying to give a kid a chance. Why wouldn't they want that kid they supposedly love and care about so much to go to the same elementary school as their own child?
Right.
Because they got a government voucher to pay for the tuition. So, but you know, we know what the real issue is. The real issue is they were afraid, by and large, that probably the more capable students from the inner city, because it would have been the parents that would make that extra effort, you know, to put their kids somewhere.
Somebody like Ben Carson.
Yeah. So the more capable students from the inner city would then be trained to a great degree by parochial schools. And they didn't want that.
Right. Then
they didn't want those kids taught about God.
They wouldn't want
taught them. Taught about honor and morality on the government dime.
They wouldn't be able to indoctrinate them,
basically. They would lose the power of indoctrination. So they were more than willing to lose the quality of those, to cheapen the quality of those same children's education for the sake of their political agenda. So that's all it comes down to. They knew they would be losing these kids to the agenda. And these kids would come out thinking different. They didn't want them to think different. They want them to be, you know, foot soldiers for the latest, political initiative.
Or environmental cause instead of their own individual cause. And the problem isn't just at the...
So that's never going to happen, the voucher, for that reason. That's what I'm trying to get at. It's never going to happen. The idea makes perfect sense, but it's never going to happen.
Yeah, and I think
because
until people
they don't want that.
Are willing to say, you know what, I don't care that I have to pay for my own children's own education.
That's where we are.
That's where we are, because they think they get a free education, but in reality, there's no way it's a free education when, you know, everybody's paying for everybody else's child's education, but nobody's paying for their own child's education is where the problem is. So until you can break that hold, even at the family level with regards to income taxes, it's going to be hard to overcome that. So I get that, but those are decisions that people make on an individual basis, and honestly, most people don't want to have to pay.
So, and, you know, with my kids, when they got to the middle school age, I switched them out of the public school into a private school. And looking back, I might have done it sooner.
Yeah, I definitely. I mean, I had the advantage that I was able to put my kids into a private school from the beginning when they started out in kindergarten. By the time they got to high school, they ended up going to the public schools. And my one son, the oldest, he wasn't the smartest kid in his class in the public schools. He struggled, but when he went into the high schools, he was, you know, basically Einstein when it came to comparing him to the public education. So I definitely see that there's a huge difference there.
Well, for me, it was a matter of I really had no choice, because I was living in San Francisco, and to put your kid into an urban school is like sending them to San Quentin High, you know, metal detectors, detectors, okay. Cops, you know. I swear I saw a sniper on the roof, you know, and this was school to those guys. And that, and these are, like I said, urban schools are the worst.
Right.
It's because they exist as laboratories for any government policy. They don't, the idea of educating these kids is so far out of their purview.
Yeah.
It's not even funny.
Here's a quote that I found that I think kind of sums that up. The aim of public education is not to spread enlightenment to all. It is simply to reduce as many individuals as possible to the same safe level, to breed and train a standardized citizenry, to put down dissent and originality. That is its aim in the United States, whatever the pretensions of politicians, pedagogues, and other such monobanks, and that is the aim everywhere else. So this guy's pretty cynical, but it really is. It's to bring everybody down to the same level, and you see that in our environment where everything's all about equality, right?
No, that was H.L. Mencken, and ironically how this issue has shifted. In his day, he would have been a liberal voice.
Yeah.
You know? And how this issue has flipped to the other side, because that would have been the liberal that would have decried the mediocrity of the public right. school system and how it's affecting society. But the bottom line is he was right. He was right.
Absolutely.
He saw it for what it was. He saw it where it was going. And this is the idea is, can it be saved? I heard that Donald Trump was talking about putting it more on the local level when they were talking about the Common Core.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was in one of the debates. But whatever you do, I think parents can't wait around for some politician to fix this.
No.
You have to take this into your own hands. You have to become proactive about it. I talk to parents whose middle schoolers start messing up. And one of the things I say is, why do you think you have to leave them in the same situation,
right.
to go gangster on you? Why? 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 Because they think that's the way it is. You just what you're supposed to do. And, you know, you have to get involved. You have to
right. take a stand and,
take a
and
stand,
be willing to say,
disrupt
you know
the
what?
Flow of those things.
Right. And it's not just at that level. I mean, when you start looking at it at the college levels, I mean, a lot of these colleges are indoctrinating the kids just as well in those particular areas, liberal arts and that kind of stuff. Now, I think from a scientific point of view, the STEM, you know, science, technology, engineering, math, that kind of area, I think it's still an education system versus an indoctrination system. But when you look at it in the liberal arts environment and those kind of things, they're doing the same thing. And again, the federal government is encouraging it with federal loans and federal grants. So the problem continues throughout the whole system. And
now, you know, when you look for different options, you know, one of the options is homeschooling. Now, homeschooling is a slippery slope, because if the parent isn't really good at teaching, then, you know, they can certainly be behind. And I've seen this come out both ways. But I also know a homeschool kid today works for the Fed in Washington, and he was homeschooled till like the sixth grade. And I mean, his education was so far and above everyone around him, smart, you know, mm-hmm. native intelligence to go right. with it, that there's no way if he would have been that far ahead had he just gone through 1 through 6 in his neighborhood school.
Right.
You know? So there's two sides to that story.
Definitely. So we're going to take another quick break, and we'll come back and finish up the last segment of Solomon on Blast. School's out. We'll be back.
Your mama pajama rolled out of bed and she ran to the police station. When the papa found out, he began to shout and he started the investigation. It's against the law. It was against the law. Oh, what your mama saw, it was against the law. Your mama looked down and spit on the ground every time her name gets mentioned. Papa said, oh, if I get that boy, I'm gonna stick him in the house of detention. Well, I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard. Take me away, but the press let the story leak. Now when the radical preach come to get me released, we is all on the cover of Newsweek. And I'm on my way. I don't know where I'm going. I'm on my way. I'm taking my time, but I don't know where. Goodbye to Rose, the queen of Corona. See me and Julio down by the schoolyard.
All right, we're back with more of Solomon on Blast here on Power Talk Live. Me and Julio down by the schoolyard. At least Paul Simon says that's where he's at. But we're talking about education and whether school's out, as in what Alice Cooper says, forever. The question is there any future for education in the public arena? And maybe we don't want to take that path from a public education point of view. Like I said, Proverbs 9:9, Solomon says, give instruction to a wise man and he will be still wiser. Teach a just man and he will increase in learning. And I think we see a change coming down if you start looking at what's going on over the internet with regards to learning. Khan Academy has taken, I think, the world by storm with regards to his ability to teach. Their slogan is for free, for everyone, forever. Now, that's a pretty significant slogan to have in place, but when you're backed by the likes of Bill Gates, maybe that is a possibility. He's teaching somewhere around, I think the number is 25 million kids over the internet with his courses that are online at khanacademy.org. So there's alternatives out there. Do we have to stick with the public education system that's in place?
I don't think you do. I think it's to say one of the great things about America is the entrepreneurial spirit, and someone will get a hold of it, and someone will figure out a way to do it right. And so that's a little out that we always have here, is that someone's going to figure this out, and when they do it, it's going to work. And when it works, everyone will rally around it. This is why I'm not particularly, you know, this is kind of off topic, but it isn't. You know, everyone talks about the electric car. Well, when someone does it really right, and you can get 500 miles out of a charge, it'll sell. You know what I'm saying? Do it right, and people will buy it. That's all. You know, can't. The problem is the government tends to force things on people, whether they like it or not, and then they want it to work by dictate, but things don't work that way.
Right. Now, it may be more than the American entrepreneurial spirit. There's an article in the latest issue of Forbes that talks about a gentleman by the name of, I'm probably going to butcher this Chinese name. I didn't study Chinese very much when I was in college, just a little bit, and it was only Mandarin, so I don't know which one this is. Zhang Bangxing, I guess, capitalized on a leading preoccupation of Chinese parents giving their one child, because most Chinese can only have one child, the finest education possible with a tutoring engine. And he starts them young. He has a school for toddlers, some no more than 2 years old. They go through 90 to 120-minute classes, typically beginner math, that costs their parents about $20 an hour, which doesn't sound much, but the average Chinese worker by comparison earns around $2 an hour. So some of these students will stick with his tutors through high school and get into history, math, Chinese, English, and more. His company, Tao Education Group, is one of the biggest players in Chinese private education. Revenues from his 301 schools in mainland China have climbed nearly 300% in 4 years to $434 million. Now, why is he in Forbes? Because he's now one of the new billionaires in the world. $1.2 billion he's worth since his company went public in 2010. So actually $1.5 billion fortune. He plans to continue opening more schools, adding locations. He plans to open 2 to 4 new schools each year, but he's increasingly focusing on online offerings. And so here's somebody in China that took a simple business, tutoring, into a $1.2 billion business. And so I think, you know, the opportunities out there. We don't need the federal government to continue to educate us when we have the opportunity through online. There's another article that was out there about this kid. He was homeschooled with MIT courses starting at 5 years old, and he got accepted into MIT at 15, using MIT's own online courses to educate himself. So the opportunities are out there, and I think if we're open to believing that there's something other than the public education system, something a lot better, especially if Khan Academy, probably the largest school system in the world ever, teaching more kids than anywhere else. 25 million kids is a lot out of one school. So there's opportunities out there.
Yeah, that's Chinese. That's not American, but
right.
But it's the spirit of what we're referring to, right?
Right.
Someone's going to come up with some ideas,
absolutely,
and they're going to make those ideas work. And once they work, you're going to find a lot of people that will always try to defend the traditional. But once the crowd starts running over there, then everything changes.
Right. And there's a system that was put in place in World War I on how they handled wounded that came into the medical centers. They call it a triage, right? They look at them and make three choices. Either one, the person's going to live without any treatment. Two, they're going to die even with treatment. And three, they'll live if they get treatment. Well, they usually push two out of the three off to the side. The mm-hmm. ones that lived with treatment, they worked on. And I think our public school system may be that one that, even if you treat it, still going to die. So maybe it's time to push that one
well,
off
then,
to the side.
You know, again, because you're dealing with taxpayers' money and you don't want, I don't think any first world advancing people can let education just go, you know, to but, individual situations. But I think it's going to have to be a blend of the two, that you can recover some public school systems, and you'll have to, because you have to do it, because if you don't, there's going to be people based on the fact that they don't have the discipline at home, they'll never get, you'll be back in, you know, Victorian England with, you know.
Well,
with,
if you look at some of those
street kids just roaming, with, you know, with nothing.
Maybe we are there. You look at some of those numbers with these kids coming out of schools that can't read. So
you'll be back to child labor.
Yeah.
Just to give them something to do.
Well, we always try and bring it back to that one greater than Solomon, that is Jesus Christ. In John 6:45, he said, "It is written in the prophets, and they shall be taught by God. Therefore, everyone who has heard and learned from the Father comes to me." And that's really what we're looking for, that wisdom from Jesus. That's who we need to come to. So until next week, keep thinking wisely.